Live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
Political analyst Dr. Siphamandla Zondi is on the line with us. As I said, it's lots to go through, and we just thought maybe it's a good time to take a breather and get some analysis on this. Prof, thanks for making time for us. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Pamela, and good evening to the listeners as well.
All right. So obviously, there's been a lot of talk around about this government of national unity. Just maybe, perhaps initially, your first reaction on the formation of the government of national unity, or at least its intention to be formed.
Oh, yes. I like how you put it in the last sentence. The ANC and the PA have released a statement of intention indicating the terms upon which their intention would be based. And the intention, it's a government that includes as many political parties as it possible. That's the intention. And they're hoping that the political parties are going to respond positively to this and make themselves available to be part of this government. At a point when a significant number of political parties are in and only a minority are out, it would qualify to be called a government of national unity, of peace times. Governments of national unity are usually established in crisis times, in conflict times, but it's not the only conditions under which they are established. It can be established right now by parties sacrificing their advantage in order to accommodate another. And that the gist of it is that the parties that are well within their right, two of them, to constitute government and then leave it to themselves and share the spoils among themselves, simply just open up a space right now and give an opportunity to parties that would not have made it and that they do not have to bring in order to make a majority and bring them in so that they can share the spoils a little bit. In return, those parties are expected to support the common agenda, and that way it makes governing in a coalition a little easier than it would have been if it was just the ANC and the DA.
When we look at the conduct of these political parties leading up to the elections, I mean, you had the DA itself leading a caucus of political parties to outwit and outnumber and boot out the ANC out of government. That was the mandate of that Moonshot Pact, which changed names along the way. That was its intention. They wanted it to lose a majority, and they wanted it to be out of government.
Definitely.
What does the DA, and of course, very, very quickly, after the results started trickling in, the DA said, well, we no longer have this. We're out of it. We heard people who had committed to this, the Action SA being one of them, saying, well, they feel betrayed. We now find them in this government of national unity arrangement, as I said, intention to arrange this government of national unity with the ANC. How do you think their own constituencies are going to react to this?
I hope their own constituencies would make a distinction between a pre-election period and a post-election period. In the pre-election period, every party is trying to win, and every party is trying to bring down whatever party is in charge. But the results of the elections have said to them that objective cannot be achieved. And as a result of that, they now need to set a new objective for a new battle. For the previous battle, they had an objective was to bring down the ANC. For the new battle, after failing that one, must have also defined purpose. They've decided that their defined purpose is to contribute and be in government, work with the ANC, and build things in that direction. But that is what is stated. We do not know what is the unstated strategy. whether they're coming into this coalition in order to undermine the ANC from inside. That's also still a possibility. But it is never stated when you are going to go into a partnership with the party that you want to destroy. You only stated that perspective if you are going to go into a competition election with a party that you want to defeat. But once you want to kill it from within, you don't say so. You become friendly, you become cordial, and you become smiley when actually you have other objectives.
Is that what you think is maybe happening here?
We don't know. The DA might be genuinely in this in order to build something new, but it also, we must be open to the possibility that the DA will still want to achieve the pre-election purpose using a different strategy, which is what I like to call hugging an enemy with thorns on your chest.
Okay.
And with every hug, the enemy bleeds and you smile.
So that may, and you and I are speculating, that may be the DA strategy, in which case perhaps there was consensus internally. What then is the ANC strategy? And do you think there's consensus there?
Come again, I missed that part.
I'm saying, what then do you think the ANC's actual internal strategy is? And do you think they themselves, there's consensus there within the ANC about the strategy?
The ANC had a strategy. The ANC had a strategy for elections, like every party did. And now that elections produced the results they did not see, every party changed their strategy. From the looks of it, it looked like the ANC has also changed the strategy, which is, how does it remain a leader of government without having the requisite number of seats in parliament to do that? And what it decided to do is to water down its rhetoric around the DA and other parties and go for what it calls a government of national unity. And that's one part of the strategy we know. But we also don't know what is the end game. What is to be achieved besides what is said in the Statement of Intent, which is a public document, where it talks about building unity, promoting values, building South Africa, and all of that. Parties can have good intentions to do good for society, but they almost always have some intentions related to boosting their own power. Whether the ANC wants to use this to salvage its image and draw from the images of others who are better than it right now, those who've grown their votes when it was losing their vote, so that it can claw back in 2026 and again in 2029. We do not know. I hope that they have thought through their strategy, but in the process of that, are not naive about the fact that the DA, the IFP, the PA, the Good Party, now the PAC, also have strategies, and everybody has a strategy to try and get a mileage out of this, but we do not fully know what mileage are they looking for.
Okay, let's then talk about the MK party. The MK party going into this, and it does seem like everybody was surprised by the results. In fact, quite alarming and quite a huge support that I think really many didn't see coming. And then rejecting the results, not attending the first seating.
Except everybody was surprised.
Yes.
It's performed except itself. it is simply was surprised that it went only that far. It has gone further to 2/3 majority. But we're all surprised. The implication of it is that everybody is trying to figure out how to relate with this surprise. And it seems that it, too, is trying to relate with this massive power now it already has, and is trying to figure out how to relate with it in a manner that recognizes that it now has significant power in the South African political system.
So what do you make of so far how they've managed the results? As you're saying, of course, everybody was surprised it was that high, except that they were expecting more. So how do you make of how they're managing as they go along, decisions they're making? I'll give you an example right now. In fact, a statement came through from the MK party saying that they're not going to be attending tomorrow's inauguration. They decided not to go and attend the first sitting of parliament. However, they subsequently said they will now send the 58 representatives to parliament. Initially, they had also said they're going to abstain from engaging in any government formation in the provinces. They then changed again and then started engaging in that sense. All of these movements by the MK party, what do you make of that?
Part of it seems to me they are shocked by the results it got and the immense responsibility placed upon it all of a sudden, that it had to really adjust its behavior in that period of first 6 days after the announcement of results. It seems to me that it got stuck in challenging the results instead of wisely planning how then to do with the processes should the results be announced and how it's going to handle negotiations and stuff like that. It seems to me that it did not want to lead any coalition, or it did not realize that if it wanted to lead, it would need to be among the first parties to go out there and court other parties to its side and decide what it is that it's going to offer other parties. It might be a little bit of a lack of experience, though founded by one of the parties, political veterans.
Yes.
But the whole host of them, the party is 5 months old. It might have lacked experience in managing these dynamics and all of that, but it also might be a deliberate one. We must be open to the possibility that it's a deliberate one. I can see why they did not want to go to the first sitting. They wanted to have their own swearing in done separately.
Okay.
They did not want to dignify President Ramaphosa with their presence. So they will be in parliament when President Ramaphosa is not in parliament.
Mm-hmm.
That's what actually it means.
Okay.
Which means when President Ramaphosa presents the State of the Nation, expect that they will also not turn up.
Oh, maybe.
Because their strategy has been to seek to isolate the president or separate him from the...
Would that be sustainable? Would that be sustainable, that kind of conduct? Because, I mean, there are many times when we're going to have to hear from the president. We're going to have to hear him give the State of the Nation, as you just said now. And there will be debates as well, which I'm assuming they would want to be a part of too.
We don't know. They might skip the State of the Nation,
mm-hmm.
but participate in the debate.
Mm.
It's just parties debating among each other.
Yeah.
Just to signal what they are signaling. Because remember, they will still get the speech itself.
Yes, of course.
Probably watch it on TV or get copies of it,
yes.
Whatever the case might be. But remember, it's part of their political messaging,
mm-hmm.
part of their positioning. The support they have comes out of this shared belief that the ANC under President Ramaphosa is different and that it belongs to one faction and that they belong to the other faction. It's usually called the RET, and they continue as an RET outside the ANC, now called MK Party. And to sustain that, they are locked into taking the position that they take on Ramaphosa, almost similar to the EFF position on Zuma when Zuma was the president.
Mm.
Kind of got locked into it. We'll never sit in his presentations.
Mm.
And they did that, and they gained a lot of mileage, by the way, when they did that against Zuma. Then perhaps these ones also hope to gain a mileage in the constituency that they have. And remember, they have this over 2 million base they need to keep pandering to, keep giving signals to. And they are careful not to commit the mistake that the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal was perceived to have done, which was to have abandoned its positions that it had at the point of the provincial election for expediency or for compromise or for pragmatism. And they and their constituency hit them for that because it's kind of a rigid constituency that has come to believe that the problem is Ramaphosa.
I'm going to take,
not the ANC.
I'm going to ask that we take a quick break, if you don't mind, Prof. Professor Sipamandla Zondi is on the line with us. He's a political analyst and very happy to take your questions, by the way. If you have any questions and maybe you want clarity on one or two things, he's very happy to take your calls on 086-000-0959. You can also send a voice note on 063-688-0959.
Good evening, Aus Pimelo. Just heard now Dr. Popi Ramu Watwat, just forgot the name, Ramotoha, something like that. I think these politicians, they speak the same language over and over and over and over and over. Like, it's, we can count 20 years back, the same thing that they are doing, even if they can be changing their positions in terms of in parliament or whatsoever, they speak the same thing, but they don't have any vision of changing lives of the people who put them there in terms of us voting for them. Even if they can come through Kokasi and ask Khore, what can we do for you? You're going to give them ideas and everything. But implementation from their side is going to take something like 4 years, which is useless for me. That is, nothing will change. They're still speaking. I mean, how can you come on radio, you say, I know we have problem of job creation. You haven't even done anything for the last 20 years. You haven't created any jobs.
So thanks very much for staying with us. It's 25 minutes after 9 o'clock. We were in conversation with Professor Sipamandla Zondi, who is a political analyst. Prof, I'm sure you were listening to that voice note. I suppose there is a bigger question to be asked here. Once we get over these negotiations and these arrangements, will the 7th administration deliver on the promises made to those who went out and voted in this May?
This is something, Pamela, that they must be most worried about. Some of us said to President Ramaphosa in 2019, you've seen the decline in the votes. You've got in, scraped in, partly because you're a bit more popular than the ANC yourself. Then it said the best way to secure 2024 is to perform in 2019, 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023, 2024, so that you don't have to campaign like a party outside government and scramble for rallies and door-to-doors trying to persuade people. Let your performance persuade people, because that's an advantage of incumbents. If you are an incumbent government, you have all these 5 years to campaign via performance, so that you don't have to campaign via persuasion and lying and propaganda and other ways that political parties use generally. And it does seem as if the ANC didn't quite realize that. And I partly think that the ANC did not quite think it would decline this much. If it had known it was going to decline this much, though it's been said everywhere, if it hadn't believed in it, maybe the past 2 years would have seen massive use of state power to fix things everywhere, and be very visible about it, so that they can be rewarded with a vote. But it seems to me that they did not quite get the message, which is why the behavior did not change.
We are also hearing from the ANC itself that the discussions leading up to these arrangements with the DA and others were quite robust. Do you think the ANC can keep it together internally after making this commitment to the other political parties that they've gone into the government of national unity with?
I think the calculation has been made that pretty much the leadership of Cyril Ramaphosa has secured a victory over its rivals inside the party. That the RET faction has pretty much been disarmed, demobilized, neutralized, and a big part of it is now is existing outside the ANC, and that therefore this leadership is unassailable, and therefore it has this courage and boldness to take major decisions on behalf of the all. hoping that all will that just follow tune, will just believe the bona fides of the current leadership and press on. But in so doing so, they might be making a huge miscalculation because the RET, Ruzoma himself, makes a very telling statement in December 16 last year, when he says, I remain a member of the ANC, but I'm going to be campaigning for this new party, MK. What do you think his supporters within the ANC thought? They thought I could be the same thing. I would become a member of the PEC of the ANC, the REC of the ANC, and even the NEC of the ANC, and still work with MK. Which therefore means that this faction might not have been neutralized as thought. Mm. It might still be functioning within the ANC. It might be the one that might lodge a revolt internally, only if it can find some ambitious ANC leader who feels that they need to lead after Ramaphosa. And then they will find ready-made foot soldiers who will do that. So pretty much what the ANC has now decided that the next week or the next 2 weeks, the DC against President Zuma, former President Zuma, is going to take place. It might be understood as a DC against President Zuma and all those sleeper cells within the ANC, and they are likely to also respond in one way or the other. It could lead to bleeding with ANC losing people at a time when it can least afford to lose anything. It could lead to a big problem for them at local government level. Because if these sleeper cells, these MK people within the ANC, who are councillors, for example, just decide to resign, we will have by-elections all over. Remember in Mzumbe, in the south of Durban, there were those four councillors that the ANC was trying to fire and end up not firing because they realized that if you fire them, you're going to have to find alternative councillors who must still retain those seats, and these people are entrenched there. Otherwise, you will lose the seats when you are trying to punish people. And that's a very big, it has a very tight rope to navigate, and it must not assume that its idea of working with the DA and bringing this GNU is universally accepted inside the ANC.
Prof, I can only go on history and what we have experienced here at local government level, that we are now hearing the political party saying they all want to do what is best for the country. And I'm saying they failed to do that at local government level. They have failed to do that, you know, at the very basic level where we can experience how working together can actually assist us all. They failed to do that. And I wonder whether their failure to do that in real terms, will that compromise, for instance, the DA leader, John Steenhuisen, and also in the ANC, President Cyril Ramaphosa, particularly President Cyril Ramaphosa, who's in his second term?
Yes, and then, of course, you know, in ANC culture, when you're in a second term, you're at your weakest, and people are still looking for a reason to recall you. No president has finished the second term in the ANC. None after 94. Mandela did not finish, did not get into it. Of course, by decision, but no other president has finished the second term. So this happening at a time when President Ramaphosa in his second term, with vultures circling around him, looking to replace him, it's a very risky one. And as you said, it's correct. By the way, when every one of those coalitions were being established, the parties were talking about doing it for the good of the people.
Exactly.
They were saying the same message, but they've been found wanting. Now we're finding the same parties are saying it at a national level. What I've proven at a local government level is that they were doing it for positions. Now we must believe they're not doing it for positions, but wait and see after the president releases the cabinet post and all that. If certain parties do not get any positions, they will walk out. I saw the PA say that if I don't get a ministry that makes sense, not sports or anything other thing, I walk out of the CNU. Literally, openly say so. I think good party would do the same thing. I think PAC have just made a gamble and got in. But if they don't get a deputy minister post, don't get a minister post, and we promise we'll help you somewhere, they probably would walk out.
Well, let's,
it's a position.
We can also
not
assume
change.
Prof, and maybe you can weigh in on this, we can also assume that, let us also not leave out the DA, who very publicly have said for a long time that they believe in proportionate representation. So they believe they're the second biggest party. Of course, they expect the second biggest party rewards.
Of course. And remember, they have a principle, that a principle of threshold.
Yes.
That in any coalition, only parties that have reached the threshold of 2%
mm-hmm.
should qualify to have that. So they don't have a 0.1% party holding the bigger parties to ransom. They've taken a position that is anti-small party. Now this government of national unity they are establishing has a number of small parties, very minute parties that are there. We now have to watch how the DA responds to that. Now, the DA itself, I think it has calculated, Pamela, that there is no chance of it forming government ever via elections. Perhaps the best way to be in national government is through tying in with the ANC, leapfrog on it, ride on it, exploit it, and then gain some mileage so that they can run things at a national level. That is why they don't want the presidency, they don't want the speaker, they want some ministerial position where they can demonstrate governance.
Mm. How volatile will the ANC be when they can't use patronage? We now have less seats that they can offer their members now in parliament, less positions, particularly with this government of national unity. It makes it very difficult, very, very difficult to remain powerful within a party where you can't reward people who support you.
The former president and former deputy president, Mohlanthe, once said the ANC does need to decline so that it can lose what he called the lies.
Mm.
Those who scapegoat, those who parasite on the ANC, because as soon as they don't get position, they will resign.
Mm-hmm.
Even now, think about former ministers who are now back and all that as MPs. If they don't get positions in the cabinet, I don't see them staying as MPs, because it also has implications on their pensions.
Exactly.
So we are likely to see those resignations again, resignations. Of course, we should create space for those who could not make the cut, because the numbers go up,
mm-hmm.
and then whoever was number 83 now can get in.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that you do. But the ANC has a tough job to do. It will only work for it if it has decided, come what may, we rather lose people and trim down to people that are committed to the agenda than try to keep everyone pleased. They don't have now, they might not be able now to deploy people in the diplomatic service when they fall off the mm-hmm. list for cabinet and all of those kind of things. There's very little room for them to maneuver. This coalition is to watch them to see how they do cater deployment.
Mm.
And remember, the DA is there and is the opposition in its mentality.
Mm-hmm.
It will be collecting all that data. It should be collecting all the information. And the ANC has to tread very carefully. So the ANC cannot, things have changed fundamentally for the ANC, because it can no longer have the leeway it has in the past to use state power to its advantage. Now that the state power is subject to what it called consensus and sufficient consensus.
Yes. Okay, let's quickly talk about the EFF.
But do you understand the sufficient consensus idea, though?
Yes, I do. Well, maybe go ahead and
the implication of it. But the implication of it right now,
they do rely on the DA
on the one side.
Yes,
the ANC is on the one side. They call centre left. The ANC now it's just been joined by PAC.
Yes,
very minute and smaller than.
Yes,
on certain policy positions, if the DA, the IFP, and Freedom Front, or whoever else agree, they already would have sufficient consensus. There'll be over 50% mm-hmm. of the cabinet. So the moonshot members who are in this would still be able to pursue their moonshot perspective of this principle that they inserted into this agreement, which is sufficient consensus.
Yeah.
But if we don't have full consensus,
yep.
if three of the five go for it, then it's legitimate decision.
Mm-hmm. I want to quickly address the EFF and the formation of the Progressive Caucus. What do you make of this Progressive Caucus and your understanding of its objectives?
The voters have forced parties, those who want to govern as a collective. It seems those who also don't want to join the collective, that the inclusive government that is being set up, now have also realized that it's best to work collectively. And there are two collective ways in which they do it. One is this one, where it is kind of more long-term commitment to each other because of deeply shared views and perspective and outlook, like a progressive caucus, called Progressive Caucus because at ideological level, mm-hmm. they share affinity.
Mm-hmm.
The second way is tactical alliance,
mm-hmm.
where we agree in opposition to a particular policy. And though we don't agree on other things, we decide to vote together because tactically it benefits us all. Expect to see both.
Yes.
With the former, you don't have PAA, we don't have Action SA in there,
mm-hmm.
we don't have Freedom Front in there. But with the latter, you can expect them in. But it won't be Progressive Caucus. It will be some other tactical alliance where the people in the Progressive Caucus work with the others who are outside the Progressive Caucus in order to checkmate the governing party. So both the DA and the ANC must just be ready for how the game was going to be played, including divide them on matters such as this matter that is now tabled already, the matter of Palapala, make it very awkward.
So this is interesting for me because in as much as everybody now seems to think ideologically they found each other, you've already seen that the PAC, well, we don't know which section is which, but others are saying, you know, we're staying with the Progressive Caucus. Others are saying we have now joined the Government of National Unity. The ANC keeps telling us they're talking to everybody. They continue to talk to everybody, including the MK Party and the EFF. Now, the question which I even asked the DA is that should the ANC and the MK Party find each other, what then happens to the DA? The DA has been very clear they will be leaving the Government of National Unity. What do you make of it?
I really suspect that the ANC is not talking of AP in order to form government now. Talking to them and the EFF to keep cordial relations. It has given up on them joining in.
Mm-hmm.
It has also indicated, it signaled it by saying, we've told them, but they put impossible conditions and stuff like that, both of them. So that if this coalition with the DA collapses, then they will switch to it. You keep in touch with them, not to include them now. The PAC, by the way, has joined the GNU, and it has said it has joined it in order to push for a progressive agenda internally. In other words, it's there to contest the dominance of the center-right party, the DA, the IFP, in the current arrangement. They're coming to counterbalance it. That's what they've actually said today. But we know that they do it also expecting a position. And I wonder whether if they don't get a position, they will proceed. And whether they'll be able to stomach many of the things they stand against now being done also in their name. I wonder whether they'll be able to stomach it. PAC is a party that throw tantrums very quickly. I see them throwing tantrums and walking away in jest.
Prof, I'm going to ask for another quick break, if you don't mind, and I'll open the lines as well. 086-000-0959. The voice notes can come through on 063-688-0959. Thank you so much for staying with us. We're in conversation with Professor Siphamandla Zondi, really trying to analyze the political landscape at the moment. Lots going on, as you've been hearing, and lots of moving parts as well. So we're trying to get a handle on what is and what can be possible and what all of this means to all of us. Prof, thanks again for staying with us. We were speaking before the break about the Progressive Caucus and the PAC and their decision to join the GNU. And I'm seeing the PAC behave a little bit like COPE. And what do you think is going to be the outcome of this internal squabble? Because these are quite fundamental differences internally, that you have the one section saying that they are not going to be joining the GNU, and then the other adamantly saying that, no, we in fact are part of the Progressive Caucus.
A typical PAC challenge of being two-headed. And remember, they've had challenges with sitting members of parliament and their presidents in cabinet. The last three were in parliament had to be contested because they were told that they were now holding the positions of their own, not of the party. And it seems that's the same contestation now. It says, no, no, we have ambitions as president. We're now joining this thing and we are selling out. Simply because the MK has really been successful in sending this signal of sell out and sending this message of sell out, the PAC constituency also worries about being seen to have sold out. And how this plays out within the PAC could divide it, and would seriously divide it. And I don't know whether the president of the PAC would be able to also stomach the politics of compromise and accommodation with a party like the DA that they diametrically opposed to. One would have to see how they coexist and how they kind of manage to put the same message together. It's going to need a lot of maturity, and it's going to need a lot of calmness and care from the DA as well. Because the DA has antagonized small parties by being arrogant, by being seen to be paternalistic. How it handles that now in this partnership with the ANC, one will have to wait and see. But they have mechanisms to keep managing and nursing this and keep keeping it together. They're going to have a lot of kicking together. I think the 100 days,
yes,
it's going to be a major test for them.
Yes.
Because that's when the policy agenda is set out. That's when everybody starts to step out. But we hope that as they step out, they don't step on somebody's toes.
And the EFF, a lot has happened in the past couple of days where I don't know whether they really wanted to have a coalition with the ANC. I don't know. What we now know is that whatever arrangement has not materialized. And we saw the MMC in Ekurhuleni being fired, who's obviously the EFF's chairperson, quite a big person in that formation. And they threatening also publicly that, well, you know, if the ANC does not reinstate him or doesn't have decent conversations with us, we are likely to pull all of our local government representatives, our MMCs. I mean, what do you make of those threats, and whether, you know, this is actually going to work for the EFF?
But the EFF does not always do what it threatens, because it never intended to do what it threatens. It's meant to signal and checkmate and cause the other party to change its way. Like this threat on the MMC was meant to stop the ANC from firing further elsewhere.
Yes.
Because it seemed as if after that had happened there, other structures of the ANC were starting to believe, oh, because the EFF is not in the GNU coalition, then they'll chuck them out elsewhere. And it seems to me it has worked. That's why after they carried out a threat and the ANC has not fired anyone else, they've also said nothing and didn't do what they threatened to do. I think it is meant to signal. And secondly, with regards to this, I don't think they wanted to come to a coalition with the ANC on the terms the DA is willing to come in terms with. The EFF is a kind of a party, and its attitude comes from the Youth League attitude, which is it wants to be an influencer. the Youth League attitude under his leadership and before him believed in being an influencer in the ANC, of being the voice that shakes, say something a little reckless, and then they discipline it, that it would have changed things. It would have said what it wanted to say. So it got that behavior. I don't think it wanted to come to terms with it. In this terms, it is happy to be outside. I think also it also knows it needs to be careful because it has lost some votes. And some votes it lost to the MK, and some votes it might have lost to the ANC, especially in Limpopo. So it knows that it needs to tread very carefully. It seems that it has realized that the best thing is to be in opposition. Mm-hmm. With the ANC, the DA going into government, mm-hmm. it is vacating that age-old position it mm-hmm. has had for a long time mm-hmm. of being mm-hmm. opposition, mm-hmm. which is why the EFF immediately announced that it is changing its opposition strategy. Mm-hmm. It won't be disrupting. It mm-hmm. won't be shouting anymore. Mm-hmm. It will now be presenting argument. It has realized that a vacuum has been presented to itself. Mm-hmm. Now it leaves. Now it leaves to the MK the choice of playing the old EFF strategy of disruption and throwing tantrums. The EFF is now playing adult, is going to play like the DA and hope to make more mileage than the DA because it has a little bit of radical. It can really taunt this coalition. And they're going to taunt it very seriously. And I'm sure you saw during the first sitting, there were a bit of taunting as well.
Yes.
taunting and making a little bit of fun and make it lighthearted. Yes. But it still makes a very big difference.
Yeah. Let's go to Bongani, who's calling from Soweto. Bongani, thanks for calling. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Tanya. Good evening to the guests.
Yes,
I'd like to put the question is that apart from the in terms of the marriage with the Gatsby's coalition, the marriage between the DA and the ANC, apart from the clear deployment of the ANC, what do you think are the other elements of which they've put the ANC into a tight corner, although they've reached those agreements behind doors, but they've put the ANC into a tight corner that ANC cannot exercise whatever elements that ANC was using based on their advantage?
Well, and I'm hoping that Prof heard you. Wow. It's a bad line. Were you able to hear?
Yes, I did. Right. Beautiful question.
Yes. Go ahead, Prof.
Should I answer?
Yes,
Oh, yeah, of course it's that. And then the second one is keeping a watchful eye on the NPA
mm-hmm.
over the prosecution of those that are fingered in the Zondo Commission.
Yes.
Many of them are in...
In Parliament now.
Yes. So it's going to be very interesting how that is played out. And then the prosecution of other cases that are not there, such as the case that is keep bubbling up over the deputy president.
Mm-hmm.
So there those, again, spring up. They're going to be playing government role, which is technical, which says, NPA, do your job. And they'll be urging. And the NPA knows that it's been now being watched. Mm-hmm. It can't simply ignore. When they're in opposition, they could ignore. Mm-hmm. But now they can't ignore. Because a deputy minister of justice might be TA.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. that's going to be very interesting for me, that's one. The second one, the DA has a full file of scandals that have happened under this government. Mm-hmm. And I'm really certain that they are selecting departments very carefully, the ones they prefer, in order to take whatever they have to its logical conclusion. So expect that there might be cases that spring up out of nowhere. They might be instituting disciplinary hearings against certain people. They might be exposing former ministers who now have no power. Mm. Now when you have got out of government, you have no power to protect yourself. I mean, pretty much like what has happened to the former speaker. You're completely helpless. And the people that you thought support you, suddenly forgot that they want to support you.
And I suppose, Prof, you know, this is politics. If you're not useful at this point, there would be no reason for the ANC to protect that person anyway.
Of course. Mm. Definitely. Definitely. You are no longer, there's nothing we need from you.
Yeah.
Anyway, you challenge the president on the insurrection, and when the president called it a tribal insurrection, and then you said, no, it's not. So now you're on your own. Fend for yourself. and all that. But I think it, another one that is going to be a huge, it is going to be how the ANC now rolls out the implementation of the national insurance, national health insurance, which the DA voted against. Now the DA is going to have influence on how it is rolled out, as cabinet must now decide on the roadmap fully and on the budget and all of those other things. So then they now can do that. And all the positions that they, now the cabinet must reach sufficient consensus. And that's very important. The cabinet must reach sufficient consensus for the implementation of things that the ANC thought are now done deal.
Well, Prof, quickly, it's before I'm going to take a call from Percy now, but very clearly what, in my view, will inform the direction of policy will be the budgets allocated. So whoever becomes a Minister of Finance, I think right there will have a good sense of where and where, which side these policies are going to be lying.
And the DA will probably not take the Minister of Finance.
Because they know we're all waiting.
But it will hold down the Minister of Finance and Cabinet.
Yes.
Because the Minister of Finance needs Cabinet approval.
Yeah. Percy is in Omonde. Thank you so much for calling, Percy. Hi.
Hi, Prof. I think mine is just a comment around the arrangement, because like when organizations are given a mandate, the ANC was sent to get us a what? Now they've brought us a camel. Now they must just explore as to how the camel performs. So unless they'll push the camel the horse's way, this is the situation that we at now. Yeah, that's my comment. Thanks.
That's funny.
That's very funny. Yes.
That's funny. But that's accurate, actually. Yeah.
Look, I mean, Prof, it's a lot of moving parts. And as you say, you know, some of these, for instance, the positions, which we're all keen to see, are not going to be obvious. What we have heard, though, what we have heard from the federal chair of the DA, Helen Ziller, is that they definitely want a ministry within the presidency. We all know what that's about. It's about oversight. I mean, sitting on the neck of the president.
Currently, that ministry is of, secondly, intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's responsible for intelligence and it's responsible for oversight and making sure things are implemented.
Mm-hmm.
And it also means a minister who's in that, which is why it's always been somebody close to the president, has a 360-degree view of the entirety of government.
Exactly.
Because that's where the outcome facilitators are, who report on a monthly basis what is being done and what is not being done. And this is the minister who makes sure that he or she gets the government to implement what it needs to implement.
The criticism has always been that it was never wise for the president to have that kind of a ministry within his own office. Now, if that happens, if the DA gets that ministry, that will be the person performing oversight over the president.
It's a prime minister position.
Yes.
In literally.
Yes, absolutely.
And it can very much degenerate to two centers of power.
Mm-hmm.
And it will depend on personalities. Remember the President Ramaphosa we saw in 1993, 1994, 1995, 1996 was a bold guy, was a nimble negotiator, full of energy, willing to take decisions. But the President Ramaphosa we've seen in the last 5 years is a little bit more, kind of slower, and more accommodating, and kind of more reserved, but a little softer. Now he's going to have to deal with a hard-nosed John Stevenson, always been hard-nosed, and stuff like that. How they manage those dynamics is going to need the president's best skills. And that coordinating thing that they are setting up is going to have to do a lot of work. And I know that the DA has a full set of structures that are going to be monitoring government and briefing their people who are in there, headed by the chair of the Federal Council, Helen Ziller. I don't know whether the ANC has a similar structure, just to make sure that it is not outperformed on the basis of how well prepared it is.
Mm-hmm.
to manage these dynamics.
I really appreciate your time.
I'm almost certain that the DA has done all sorts of scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
It knows exactly what to expect and has prepared what to do with everything it expects. But I don't know whether the SG Mbalula and his team are also ready for all of this. We'll have to wait and see.
Professor Siphamandla Zondi, thank you. Really appreciate you making time for us and all of this analysis. Happy viewing the inauguration tomorrow. I'm sure we'll have lots to talk about after that. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much,
Pamela. Thank you. Well, thanks, everybody. That brings us good night. That brings us to 10 o'clock. We'll be back tomorrow at 8.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.